We read in this passage of Ahaz in the 11th verse, Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah. The reign of Ahaz was a time of deep apostasy from the truth of God's word. Ahaz imported the worship of Baal and other deities into the very streets of Jerusalem. And it was only after his death, when the people did not really mourn his death, and Hezekiah, at the age of 25, became king of Judah, that there began to be a revival in the land. And as we have suggested, Hezekiah's reign led to a great contest with the Assyrian army. We can read of that account in chapter 19 of 2 Kings. And that confrontation with the Assyrian army, in which they besieged the city of Jerusalem, led to a miraculous conquest of that army. It was the glorious moment of victory. And at the most glorious moment of his life, King Hezekiah plunged into one of his sorest trials. And it is often the case. The time of greatest blessing and rejoicing melts without warning, it seems, into the most grievous adversity. Hezekiah reigned in Jerusalem over the kingdom of Judah for 29 years, from the age of 25 to the age of 54. The great victory over the Assyrians happened in the 14th year of his reign, thus about in its midpoint, as it turned out. The great victory then over the forces of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, of which we read at the end of chapter 19, occurred at the very same time that the king of Judah became gravely ill. There's some debate among commentators. There's always some debate among commentators who have a hard time deciding whether Hezekiah's illness developed from the stress that accompanied the siege by the Assyrians, or whether it's something that set in independently. Commentators often spend ink to discuss questions that are really not relevant to the matter of the event. Now it is striking that the record of Hezekiah's life in 2 Chronicles, to which we have often referred, 2 Chronicles is the book that deals with the spiritual aspects of the lives of the kings, and its focus is more on the kingdom of Judah, but 2 Chronicles says very little about this situation. If you turn over to chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles, and you look at verse 24, you will find the statement that we have a reference to what we have read in 2 Kings 20. In those days, Hezekiah was sick to the death and prayed unto the Lord. And he spake unto him, and he gave him a sign. I think we need to ask the question why it is that this account in 2 Chronicles is so brief compared to the accounts in 2 Kings 20 and Isaiah 38. Perhaps it is because what happened in Hezekiah's life during those final 15 years is not nearly so wonderful to read as that which came in the first 14 years of his reign. There is more about this incident that we find in Isaiah's record in chapter 38 of his prophecy. We will come to that in due course, and we will return to that record next Lord's Day in the will of God to consider further the matter there. Now, there are several issues that make this part of Hezekiah's life most challenging to consider. And I suppose that that's one of the factors that has kept me from coming back to this series. How shall we understand the word of the prophet to the king that he was going to die? Of course, he didn't die at that time. Was Isaiah wrong? Did Hezekiah's prayer bring a change in God? Because God said to Isaiah, tell Hezekiah to set his house in order. He's going to die. What about the aftermath? During those 15 years that marked the extension of Hezekiah's life, if you will, there was born Manasseh, the crown prince, who would succeed Hezekiah as king and who would reign in Jerusalem for 55 years. And his reign would be a time of such great apostasy and corruption that it would become the point of no return in the history of the kingdom of Judah. So that even in the reign of Josiah, who came afterward, there was a time of revival. But the Lord said specifically to Josiah that the condemnation, the judgment upon Manasseh was still going to come to pass. Also during those 15 years, and 2 Chronicles 32 refers briefly to this fact, Hezekiah welcomed embassies from Babylon. And he opened for them the house of the Lord and his own palace and showed them all the glory, all the gold that they possessed. And that willingness to welcome the Babylonians opened the way for the eventual overthrow of the kingdom of Judah by the forces of Nebuchadnezzar, of whom Hezekiah, of course, had never heard. When we look at the account and its aftermath, we find it tempting to conclude, considering these things, that it would have been better if Hezekiah died at the zenith of his power. Tempting, I say, because it is clear that the purpose of God appeared in this situation. It may be hard for us to discern that purpose, but we have no recourse but to conclude that the illness of the king was a test in his life in which God had much greater purposes to accomplish in the bringing of Messiah into the world. Now it is a situation that touches us because we wrestle in our minds with the relationship between our prayers and the sovereign purposes of God. We hear the diagnosis of fatal illness, and we plead with the Lord to spare us or to spare someone we know. And when there is recovery, we tend to conclude that our prayers made the difference in the situation. But how can that be the case when we know that God is sovereign and that God knows the end from the beginning? This situation shows us that there are times when God's purpose is to use a circumstance of this nature to promote greater dependence on Him. Isaiah. Here's another case in the passage. Isaiah was not an indecisive spokesman before the king. For there Isaiah said, Hezekiah, you're going to die. Set your house in order. There was the mercy of God, at least, giving him time to get things organized. Set your house in order, you're going to die. The prophet was delivering the message. We read that the Lord gave him to deliver. But then before he even left the palace, he received another directive from the Lord, and he delivered that directive without any concern for the apparently contradictory nature of his messages. So I say it took grace for Isaiah in the presence of the king to deliver first one message and then to come back within moments and to deliver the opposite message. There are other issues in the incident that we may not have time to explore in depth. One question the commentators like to discuss is what was the nature of the king's illness exactly? We find a reference in our Bible reading to a boil. What was the nature of that illness? And what was the nature of the physical remedy that the prophet directed those who cared for the king to use? To make a plaster of figs and apply it to whatever the situation was. And the question, I think, that excites the most interest is about the shadow going backward 10 degrees. There's something about time involved there. Was there an unusually long day? Well, the Lord is in control of His universe, and the Lord can certainly override the natural laws by which the universe functions and can do so without causing dislocation. After all, there was the famous incident in the campaign of conquest under Joshua, when the sun stood still in the sky for an entire day so that the forces of Israel could complete their victory in battle. This evening, we want to look at the outlines of this incident as we return to this series on the life of Hezekiah, and we want to consider the theme of illness and recovery in the palace. Illness and recovery in the palace. Now, as we already observed, this issue is very much part of our thinking because we deal with illness. And how are we to respond to the reality of illness? We have mortal bodies. And there are times when they break down. Sometimes a doctor says, you know, there's not much we can do here, or maybe there's nothing we can do here. Should we surrender then to what seems an absolute certainty? Should Hezekiah have said, well, okay, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die. Clearly, that was not the approach he took. So was he guilty of effrontery before the Lord? Should he have simply said to Isaiah, the will of the Lord be done, and prepared for death? You see, the reality is we don't always know what the plan of God is for our lives. At this time, Hezekiah was not yet 40 years old. And like us, he operated with incomplete knowledge. While God knows all things. Now we know that it is a good thing to pray to the Lord for deliverance. But some people, as we know, pray, and we have prayed for them, and they have still died of the illness. Were our prayers a failure? Because others pray, and we pray for others, and they recover. So, what makes the difference? How are we to reconcile those things? The answer is we can understand those things only as we submit ourselves to the reality of our sovereign God who holds every aspect of our lives in His hands. The appearance of deliverance is not always the positive outcome we think it is. In the case of King Hezekiah, as we will see, the deliverance that came to him on this occasion seemed to rob him of his spiritual discernment and of his resolve that marked the early years of his reign in being devoted to carrying out the word of God. Now, there can be no blame on God for the aftermath of this circumstance. But we recognize that if Hezekiah had died at that time, the events that followed would not have occurred. So if there's anything for us to heed in this situation, it is to take heart to the reality that God does not need us in this world. He doesn't need our lives to continue in this world beyond the point of His purpose. God will not somehow find Himself at an impasse without us. And this is perhaps the hardest lesson, because we tend to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. But if you want a lesson on that truth, visit older cemeteries. Now, I'm not talking about the nicely manicured memorial parks that we see now, but visit older cemeteries, you know, where the tombstones are standing upright and some of them are not maintained very well anymore. Sometimes the tombstones, which initially had a lot of writing on them, are almost completely devoid of information. The weather over the years has erased what was there. And yet somehow, in spite of the fact that no one knows anymore who is buried in that grave, the families of those people and the communities where those people lived managed to continue functioning without them. And I tell you, so it will be with us. When we think of this situation before us this evening, there are three ways in which to consider Hezekiah's illness and recovery. First, at death's door. At death's door. The opening words of 2 Kings 20 draw our attention to the historic context. In those days. What days were those? They were the days when the Assyrian army surrounded Jerusalem, and when the general, Rabshakeh, delivered the most insulting messages to the defenders of the city, to the men on the wall, and to the king, and to the inhabitants of the city. In those days, We read in chapter 20, the king fell very ill in those days. At a time when you would say the people could not do without his leadership, Hezekiah was laid aside. In the days when the Lord granted a miraculous deliverance in the deaths, the mysterious deaths of the soldiers of the Assyrian army, in those days, the king fell ill. It's important that we recognize the timing of the situation. There was every reason for the people to rejoice and to exult in the triumph of the defeat of the enemy, but suddenly the king was mortally ill. That is, he was at death's door. He was sick unto death, or as we read in 2 Chronicles, sick unto the death. Isaiah went to the king and he said, your life is over, basically. You're going to die. You're not going to live. Now, doctors have delivered many such messages through the years to people and their family members. The end is at hand. There's now a whole branch of medicine that deals with end-of-life issues. The message is, be ready for the end of life and for the dissolution of the body. But the timing was not good in Judah, it would seem, because Hezekiah had no heir. He had no child. That is, there was no one to carry on the Davidic line that was to lead in the prophecy of God to the coming of Messiah. Could God's messages be right? What about all the prophecies that through David's line, Messiah was going to come into the world? As I said, we're not certain about the exact nature of the illness, except that it was mortal. The application of a plaster of figs, as we find in verse 7, suggests to some commentators that there was some kind of ulceration or boil, something that erupted in the skin that resulted from the inflammation of some part of the nerves. Well, whatever the case, the king took the news of the imminence of his death very emotionally. We read in verse 2 that he turned his face to the wall. We read at the end of verse 3 that he wept sore, that it was more than just a few tears falling. He sobbed. Now we know something of the state of the king's mind at this time because we find the inspired record of it in the prophecy of Isaiah. Let us now turn to Isaiah 38. We're going to return to this passage at greater length next Lord's Day in the will of God. But beginning at verse 9, we read the first 8 verses being basically the same account as we have in 2 Kings 20. In verse 9, we read the writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, when he had been sick and was recovered of his sickness. That is, after he was well again, then he wrote of his situation. I said, in the cutting off of my days, I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the residue of my years. How many times do people say he was cut off before his time? Verse 11, I said, I shall not see the Lord, even the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. Mine age is departed and is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. I have cut off like a weaver my life. He will cut me off with pining sickness. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. I reckon till morning that as a lion, so will he break all my bones. From day even to night wilt thou make an end of me. Like a crane or a swallow, so did I chatter. I did mourn as a dove. Mine eyes fail with looking upward. O Lord, I am oppressed. Undertake for me. What shall I say? He hath both spoken unto me, and himself hath done it. I shall go softly all my years in the bitterness of my soul. Here's something then, as Hezekiah recounted it, of the nature of his response to this sickness. There was a sense in which the king bowed himself to the will of God, but still had the desire that God would intervene. He was at death's door. But the hope and the fact of his recovery was to be in another way, and that is the second thing to which we come, through God's intervention. Through God's intervention. Now we have to give credit to King Hezekiah here. As a man of God himself, he knew that only God had the power to deliver him from death. Having heard the message of Isaiah, he knew only God's intervention would make a difference. So the prophet Isaiah, on his way out of the palace, then turned around and came back to the king to tell him that there would be a cure, that there would be healing, that he would go again into the house of the Lord. Now, there's one thing that is striking in this message from Isaiah in 2 Kings 20. And that is, as we read in verse 5, "Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father." There's a touch there that I really love. There is a compelling case in that message for the truth that God is the God of the living. David, the king, the great king, was in his grave for many years. But God spoke of him here as being still very much alive. "Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father." We also learn in this same verse that God, the God of David his father, hears the prayers of his people. "I have heard thy prayers. I have seen thy tears." So many times we think that we engage in prayer, even to the point of weeping, and we think that no one knows anything about it. Here we learn God knows. And we learn that it is part of his sovereign purpose that we should call for deliverance, and that he should, when it suits his purpose, grant that deliverance. The deliverance of which we read was not only personal, but national, for the Lord assured Hezekiah in verse 6, "I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city for mine own sake and for my servant David's sake." So there was the promise of the Lord, that the Lord would protect the city from any more invasions by the Assyrians. What Hezekiah was desiring in prayer was the intervention of the Lord. And there's a message for us. That is what we desire when we come to pray. We're praying for the Lord's intervention. We're not praying for some change in God. We're simply praying, Lord, intervene according to your will, according to your purpose. It's the only path to recovery. It's the only path to revival. And the message of Isaiah was that Hezekiah could depend on that intervention for the third action. And that brings us to the third aspect of our message this evening. He was at death's door. He was seeking through God's intervention. Now we come in hope's assurance. In hope's assurance. The king said, what's the sign about what the Lord has said? What's the sign that I'm going to, on the third day from now, I'm going to go up again into the house of the Lord? So the prophet said to him, well, you have a choice. Will the shadow go forward 10 degrees, or will it go backward 10 degrees? Now, I haven't worked out exactly how much time is involved here in this going forward or going backward. There's a lot of debate, again, among the commentators about the nature of the dial and the shadow. The word for dial in verse 11 is the word that is translated elsewhere in the Old Testament as steps. And there was some suggestion that perhaps they had a way of keeping time, because sundials apparently at this time were not widely used, but there was a way of keeping time where there would be steps so that they would watch when the sun hit on certain steps, and then they would know that that signaled the passing of the day. So the offer was, will the shadow go forward? That is, will the day be hastened toward its end, or will it go backward? The king chose the option that would be more difficult. He wanted the Lord to extend the day. And we read in verse 11 that Isaiah the prophet prayed, cried unto the Lord, and the Lord brought the shadow 10 degrees backward. So that wherever it was, whether on a dial or on those steps, it retreated. Now, the liberals have a field day with this passage because they say, you see, this is why we can't really trust the Bible. Because if you had done anything like that, it would have dislocated the whole equilibrium of the solar system and the rotation of the earth and so on and so on. But it misses the point that God is in control of his creation. And God can do anything in his creation. Jesus, on the deck of that little boat, in the midst of the storm and the wind, could say, peace be still, and immediately there was a great calm. God performed a miracle here as an indication to the king that his word would come to pass. And there was the evidence that the king could rely on what Isaiah told him. Now, what do we have to conclude here? We have to conclude that it was always God's purpose to heal the king. Else he would not have been healed. The events of the after years, as distressing we will see as some of them were, were all part of God's plan to bring the end to the history of the kingdom, to send everybody to Babylon, where the generations in the Davidic line continued until Messiah came. Well, very soon, Hezekiah was back on his feet and about his business. But as we will see, the experience shook him as well. He began to think of himself not so much as the servant of the Lord, but as one of the kings of the earth. Thought of himself in a much different manner. And the tragic outcome of that change in his thinking would become apparent in the way in which he persuaded the Babylonians to come and to see all the wealth of the kingdom. We'll come to that in due course. I want to come back to Isaiah 38 next Lord's Day and look at what Hezekiah learned through his experience, because in it there is a great message of the gospel. But here there is a great message of the gospel, because what is God showing us? His purpose to bring Christ into the world was going to come to pass. And all of these historical forces that were in play were part of that purpose. And how it should encourage us this evening to know that God has not lost control of all of the purposes and the events of history. He is bringing his purposes to pass. He will bring them to pass. Whatever it means for the people of God at any point, he will bring his purposes to pass. And ultimately, the day will come when he that shall come will come and will no longer tarry. The king was sick, but the king recovered. And it was through the intervention of the sovereign mercy of God.